Welcome to another edition of Why Are You Awake? My name is Paul Farver. I'm your host. This is a show where we talk to people who are up late at night and people who used to be late at night. That's what we do. That's what we do on this podcast. This week we have comedian Joe Kilgallen. Check him out. Follow him. Check out his website. Let's Get Dumb. And also follow me. Follow me on my website, paulfcomedy.com. It's going to be right there. You can see all my upcoming dates. Follow me on Instagram, Paul Farver. And more importantly, check out our sponsors. Hey, gang. As some of you know, I used to be a practicing lawyer in Chicago. I no longer practice, but from time to time, I need a lawyer. And when I need a lawyer, I call my friend Scott Shapiro. Scott Shapiro has been practicing law for over 25 years in Chicago. He does it all, from workers' compensation to personal injury, employment issues, and even entertainment law and contract needs. If you need a lawyer, call my friend Scott. 312-648-8800. That's 312-648-8800. Or you can email him at scott@scottshapirolegal.com. Welcome to another edition of Why Are You Awake? This week we have comedian Joe Kilgallen from the podcast Let's Get Dumb and his new special, Good Grief. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me on. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great.
You and I have known each other for at least 12 years, and my introduction to you, Joe, you are known as an angry person.
I fight that, too.
And just as an example, we did a show on Thursday, and you were in the green room upset where someone said, you look younger now than you did before.
Well, I don't know why.
You're
I was
like,
upset.
That's not true. I was like, she just gave you a compliment, or he. I don't even know.
We don't know who it was. It was an Instagram account that didn't have like a person's name. Yeah. And that's what I was upset about, because they were like, and did Kilgall make a deal with the devil? He doesn't age. And I remember after bitching about it, being like, I guess this is like a humble brag. You know, it's a compliment. But in the same regard, I remember being like, I've aged. I hate when people say that shit.
I'm
like,
definitely
I've seen myself. I've fucking aged, and I'm not a fan of it. You know.
Well, on stage, people don't see the creases that we see in 4D.
That's true.
Or 4HD, whatever the fuck.
Whatever.
But Joe, when I met you, you were you're very intimidating to a lot of people. And I always, when people are like, oh, they're scared of you. And
it makes me sad a little bit, because I don't want that. I don't want people to be afraid of me.
You're not. I know. That's what's funny. It's just your persona. And people, it takes a while to realize that. And I just remember the first time you like gave me a compliment, and I felt like I finally made it as a comedian. I'll never forget it. You were next at a Laugh Factory, and I did a joke where there was a callback, an old joke. I know what joke it was, but I don't remember the way I did it back then. You know, like, hey, that's a good call. Like, you listened to it. You were sitting in the bar. I was like, oh, thanks, man. I was like, I act all cool. I was like, yeah, no, but I went upstairs. I'm like, oh, man, I am funny.
Nice, man. Well, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm to blame for all the compliments I've had.
You're right. So everyone blame. But no, I think that you do come off as angry. Why is that? Is it because you're not getting enough sleep?
Maybe that could have been it for a while. I mean, that's the reason I should be coming off angry today. But back then I was getting loads of sleep. I was, you know, before I was a dad, before I was married. So what was my stress? I always, try to tell people, I'm like, look, I'm not an angry person. I have a bad temper, and there is a difference.
Okay.
Like, think about angry people are storming the Capitol, right?
Yes.
People with a bad temper are like, hey, dickhead, you stepped in my shoe. Say you're sorry when you do that. Yeah. Don't act like you didn't just step on my shoe. And then there's words.
You're right? Like an enforcer. You want the rules enforced.
I very much.
Moral society.
Yeah, it would be society. That's the word I like to use.
You're
a
societal enforcer of rules.
I like to think of a little George Costanza. We're living in a society, you know, because that does bother me. It's when people, I think a lot of anger comes from disappointment in others. So I'm disappointed that other people aren't as courteous. Yes. I feel like I'm a very courteous person. You know, there are people way nicer and kinder than I am, but I think I'm incredibly courteous. I know when to stop my car to let other people in. You know, and other people don't know how to do this, and it's a lost. It's lost.
Do you wave
on us.
when someone lets you in?
Always wave. Yeah. Always give the wave. It's incredibly rude not to. All you got to do is lift your dumb hand up.
Question: this is a very good, since we're talking about societal norms. If someone lets you in, and then someone then comes to cut in front of you, do you let that person in? What's the rule? Because now you're on that guy's time. You borrowed time on the guy behind you, and now someone's doing it to you. Do you pay it forward, or are you paying it forward by saying, no, dude, I'm on your side. We're not going to let, I was the last one to let in.
It really depends on the scenario. Yeah.
And you know, same thing holds with immigration too.
For sure. I mean, well, my thoughts on immigration.
Like you get in, but no one else.
I shut the door behind me.
Right
now.
What's the rule?
I believe in paying it forward, but it depends on the scenario. If we're in rush hour traffic and I was fighting and edging my way in for a while, and finally someone was kind enough to let me in and they give me the, all right, go. One of those. Because you could sense them, they're the driver.
Sure.
Then I'm not going to be, you know, we're not in car welfare here. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You're
I
can't in the team with the guy behind you.
Exactly. But if it's just a casual where the guy's like, yeah, go ahead, man. I'm in no rush. Then I'm going to pay it forward and let the next person in.
What if you can't see? Are you just judging by the kind of car they are? Or?
Time of day, how traffic's been that day in that area.
Case by case basis.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of variables here.
Yeah. You know? Okay. So. That's good. That's a good answer.
Thank you.
You're very consistent. That's what we like to prove here. Consistency. So the anger thing, And someone was talking about that. Actually, Adam Burke and I were talking about it from the podcast when he did it. I'm very competitive, and I think you are too.
Yes.
And so when we do the softball games, I think that's where the anger comes out.
Oh, yeah.
But I also, I think when we have the comedy softball games, I take your side on everything in those situations because I do want to win, and some people are just having fun, which is fine. But
well, my thought process, and it took me a while to learn this too. With the comedian softball games, we had one summer, I think it was like the 2021. So it was like kind of post COVID, things were starting to open up. Really wasn't post COVID. It was still kind of going on, but people were getting together more and more to play.
Right.
And then those games, I was like, these are the games to take seriously. I had to tell myself, but the Labor Day one, the Memorial Day one, the 4th of July one.
Those are the fun ones.
Those are more the fun screw around
ones.
Oh,
I didn't
ones.
Think about that.
Cause when you have comedians showing up in jean shorts, this is not an athlete.
Yeah.
There's no sense of yelling at them. I'm just giving them more trauma that their dad gave them way back in the day.
I feel like 70% of the games are people that don't really take it seriously. They just want to hang.
Well, that's 70% of stand-up comedy is that way. People who aren't taking it seriously, they just want to hang. Wow, they want to be part of something. They show up at open mics.
You think it's 70%?
No, that maybe is too high, but there's definitely... How many times have you been at an open mic where you're just like... And you've seen certain people around... And I would never tell anyone to quit because it's like, that's not my place. But there are some people where I'm like,
still at it.
Just go learn the bass, my man. Like you obviously, it feels like your parents sent you to open mics to make friends.
Yeah.
You're not taking this seriously. Like you're a great hang, but like, what are you doing?
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know how that translates to the softball story. Too,
it doesn't. It was just more or less what percentage of people take things seriously. Because most people are like, it's 16-inch softball. Why are you and Paul taking it seriously? Yeah. I'm like, because it's all we have now, right?
For competition wise, like I don't play sports anymore, so it's like all I have.
Well, I think sports are more fun when people are taking it seriously. That's when you're going to see diving stops. You're going to see people hustling their ass off. That's more fun to me than people going up there being like, "Oh, look at me! I'm a big chubby guy, and I'm going to try to do this with the bat. Isn't this funny?" And like everyone's walking slowly, and everyone's talking.
Hustling.
Yeah, and there's a rhythm. I like a rhythm to sports. Where if everyone's goofing around and taking and they're lollygagging, I don't respect lollygaggers. Lollygagging in and out of the dugout, don't like that. Let's move our asses a little bit. Some of us have places to go later.
Right.
And some of us are trying to work up a sweat.
Yeah.
Right? I want to exercise a little bit.
Yeah, that's the same
way
here. I am.
Right?
I'm really bummed because I missed a play last time we played softball because I slipped. And then I finally bought cleats online. And then there hasn't been a game since then. And every time they have games, I'm out of town. I'm like... Hey, Joe, can we, not you, the other Joe Fernandez who runs it. I'm like, hey, is there a game? Can we do a game? And like, they'll be like, all right, we want to do a game. Who can play? And it's like seven people. I'm like, I have these new cleats that I have not worn. I've had them for 7 months. We haven't played.
Well, lucky for you, you're not a child and your foot has stopped growing. So they'll still be good next season.
Yeah.
You know what we should do? We should just pick a day and be like, hey, every Tuesday. Like pick a day where comedy's a little light. You know, I'm not saying everyone has to show up every Tuesday, but we get a good amount of
early
people.
Early enough where you can still hit shows or mics.
Sure,
or
yeah. I mean, there's only like one or two really truly good shows on a Tuesday night, you know? Well, you got Laugh Factory
that's
and
that's
about it. So there you go. And that could be our night, Tuesday night like softball like in the summer or Memorial Day to Labor Day.
When it gets nice out. So you started, how long have you been doing comedy, Joe?
I lie about it. I've been lying the other way. I've been lying saying I've been doing it less and less. That way it's not as sad that I'm not a megastar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you hit a hump and you're like, when you were younger, you kind of lied the other way to make it look like you were more seasoned. And now I'm like, 07 was pretty much my first year.
Yeah.
So if we minus the pandemic years, I've been doing it for like 8-9 years. I think that's, that's how math works. Right.
Well, Calvin Evans' system was that it doesn't count when he didn't know what he was doing. I'm like, oh, so just 3 years for me. Like,
what? Calvin's a genius. You know, I've always said that about him. A brilliant, brilliant man, underrated in his time.
So 2007, and then you, how many specials do you have now, Joe?
I just released my fourth.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I had a nice run there. So my first one I recorded at the end of 2014, and that was like my first 7 years of material, essentially. There was some stuff that got, you know, I actually did do this half hour DVD when I was like 2.5 years in. It's embarrassing. There's like only 50 copies
God.
Were made.
Thank God.
There's or maybe 50. Less than that. I don't know. Or maybe more. Maybe there's like 100 copies made. Chicago comedy OGs would remember it. And then I've got 10 minutes of material on the Comedians You Should Know compilation CD. We did a Comedians You Should Know album. But then my first thing was, it came out in 2015. Then I had back to back in 2019 and 2020. And mainly because in 2019, I toyed with this. I toyed with doing like a double album, like a double special type of thing.
Who do you think you are?
I know. It was Dane so Cook? Dumb. I brought it up to like one or two people and they go, don't fucking do that. You're an idiot. Why would you do that? Because I had that much material. I had a good hour and 30 to hour and 40 minutes. That's why I was able to do another hour the very next year. It wasn't like I was trying to do a Louis C.K. or Carlin from back in the day, challenging myself to do an hour a year. It was just I had a 30-minute jump start on that year because I left 30 minutes off. And then luckily, I just flowed right into the next 30 minutes. So the albums had, I don't want to say a theme, but kind of. They kind of had like a through line, you know, something that was like an arc to it, essentially.
Do you, the one that you did in 2015, how long was that one?
It was about 58. They're all in between 50 and 60 minutes. That one was about 58 minutes, I think. And then the last two have come in at about 55.
Wow.
This recent one is 52 or 53, I think.
Interesting. That's a lot of material.
They're going
Joe.
Less. You don't really need, I've been talking about it with a lot of headliners and some people you know as well, where it's like people aren't sitting down to watch a whole hour anymore.
Yeah.
When they go to see you live, they want the whole hour because they want their money's worth. Right. They want that evening out. But as far as watching at home, I think, you know, I mean, Sam Morrell's Netflix special was like 38 minutes.
Yeah, mine, the one that they cut up for my coming up, is coming up, is it's clocked in at 42. They took out some stuff. So I was like, that's low. And they're like, what do you mean? And
the one with helium?
Yeah, helium one.
Yeah.
So they were, but then Dry Bar did that too last year. How long was your DVD, the 2.5 minute one? 2.5 year in?
Oh, 2.5 year. That was 30 minutes.
Have you watched it in the last 10 years?
I toyed with watching it because I thought it'd be fun to watch it. I'm sure it'd be so painful. At the time, I probably thought this was 30 minutes of A material. And I bet looking back on it now, I'd be like, there's 3 good jokes here. There's 7 minutes that are good.
That's what I've been doing.
I was thinking about that for as well, but I remember back then, I mean, this is material I wrote from 22 to 24 years old, so it was a lot of nostalgia. It was a lot of just material that I don't know if it would, like alcoholic material.
Right.
I was doing a lot of like party stories.
Doesn't sound cool when you're,
No, I mean,
you're different.
I'm in my late 30s now. It's not as cool. So we'll see. I kind of want to put it up just for the sake of throwing it out there to be like, oh, look how young I looked, or look how whatever, you know, just to get some laughs from people, but I don't think it's good.
I've been going back and looking at stuff that and revisiting them. And this weekend I've been doing this old joke that I wrote 10 years ago, but it's different now because it's a different perspective. I'm talking about going to music fest when you're too old. But at that time I was already too old and now I'm like way older. So I change it. So it's now. So it's even another layer of shit. But,
I like that,
but that's cause I don't have any, when my special comes out, I burn 45 on that and 30 on the Dry Bar. So I have like, I don't have a new hour. I don't have anything.
It's kind of exciting though, right?
Not really. I'm kind of scared.
I try to look at it like it's exciting. And then I remind myself too. So once you burn the material, you could still go back and do an old joke here or there. Like you said, add a new tag to it or whatever, but you definitely don't want to do too much of it. Like I had some people come see me last night in Lake Geneva and
a fun show.
They were like, we'd heard one of those jokes before. And I'm like, that's fine. If you've only heard one and the other 35 minutes were new, cool. You know,
it's hard to remember. Like I write down all the jokes I do every night to kind of remember. But
me
then
too.
People are like, oh, we saw you at, you know, improv. And I'm like, well, I did a different show every night. So I don't know what night they did. But I feel like no matter what, 50% of it is something they haven't heard. But
definitely. Yeah,
that's good.
But you write so much. Like we did a show recently and you already had new stuff from your trip to Scotland. I was like, how did you have like a whole new 20 minutes that you've written in the last, what, 3 or 4 months?
Well, you know what it is? I think I mentioned this when I did your radio show. I've just accepted and learned to not fight writer's block when I feel, because I'll have
into it.
Yeah, I'll have like a 2 month stretch where I've got nothing new, and I just accept it. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I know I'm gonna have another wave, and when that wave comes, I lean into it hard, and that's when I dial it up more. Like in the month of November, I started to feel that where I'm like, oh, I'm in a nice creative groove right now. And I was starting to go to a lot of open mics. And I remember some comics being like, dude, I've seen you at several open mics. And I didn't. My one comic said, I've seen you at 3 open mics this week. And I don't think I saw you at 3 open mics the last 6-7 months.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at our level, we do a lot of booked shows. Open mics.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really, there's not a ton of value. I mean, there's always value working out new stuff. But as you know, I could work out new stuff at this shows that are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, we've gotten, you know, carte blanche to do that.
Why don't you?
I do usually.
Okay.
I typically do. Like, this might upset some people, but Comedians You Should Know is essentially a glorified open mic to me.
Right.
You know,
as it should be.
Well, yeah, because I help start the room and all that kind of stuff, and I'm there
great
often.
Great room Wednesday nights in Chicago, Timothy O'Toole's.
Thank you for the plug. Shout out, right? But when I'll dial it up even more, though, and I'll be like, because when I'm in that creative headspace, I'm like, I just want to be around other creative people. I want to be doing it. I want to get on stage as much as possible. Like with the Scotland trip, I kind of forced myself to just, I'm like, I'm just going to go up there and talk about Scotland. And because I just got back from there, and we'll see what happens. I kind of like having my back against the wall and knowing that
pressure. Yeah.
Yeah, the pressure of it. So while I'm up there, I'm like, fuck, I'm not being funny right now. I got to pull something out of my ass. And thankfully, I've pulled out some, you know, shit out of my ass. It's pretty good. It's pretty
That's
funny.
How I write, too. Like, I have a premise. I'll go up. And I used to do it at open mics, but now there's, like, certain workout rooms where you can, like, during the week, if you're doing 15 minutes or 10 minutes, start with, like, proven shit for 3 minutes, shit sandwich in the middle, do about 5 new minutes, then close on something. I feel like that's fine.
No, that's smart. That's what a lot of people do.
I'm a pretty smart guy. I don't know if you saw a lot of
I did
there,
see
John.
Several of them. It almost makes me think this guy's very insecure. Who's this for? You know what I mean? Like, that's worth it.
No, because this used to be my office, so I changed it. But my law office, because I used to be a lawyer. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, I talk about it sometimes, not a lot.
I'd be very proud of that.
So when do you have time to write? Because you're a dad, you're married, and you're busy with like podcasts and everything. Like, when is your writing time?
I don't write.
You write on stage?
Yeah, I write on stage. Yeah. It just doesn't work for me. When I was a couple years in, I tried to do that. I tried to have like designate time to sit down and open up a notebook and write out with pen. I can't type. I'm not some comedians who will type stuff out. I just can't do that. And it always felt forced. It always felt very forced to me. And I could hear it in other comics. Every now and then I'll hear a comedian where I could tell they thought of a funny thought and then their brain immediately was like, well, now I have to write a joke around this. And it's like, just
do it.
Share your experience. Because a lot of times it's the experience that's funny. Like the show Seinfeld was such a mega hit. And a lot of the stuff in those scripts wasn't funny on paper, but the situation was funny. I mean, hence situational comedy, sitcom, is that it's like, holy fuck, that's a crazy thing that happened. And so a lot of times I'm trying to share the crazy thing, like with the Scotland trip. You know what I mean? I told a story about the bartender telling me, well, it's not really, we don't really call it scotch. It's just whiskey to us. And I'm like, oh, he's like, yeah, if you go to China, do you order Chinese food or is it just food? And I'm like, all right, dude, let's calm down, Braveheart. Like, you know, it's just a natural like thing. Right. And, you know, people seem to identify or like that joke a lot. But I'll hear comedians where I'm like, it sounds overwritten. And when it's overwritten, the audience senses it. Mm-hmm. I've seen audiences just kind of like, oh, yeah, funny little anecdote there. But there's no like authenticity behind those. So that's why when I think of something funny, I will kind of like jot down a couple words of it to remind myself like, oh, that's funny. And then I'll take out the notepad and write down like 2 or 3 words. Then I take those 2 or 3 words because I'm thinking about it the whole ride to the show. Then I'll go up there and just kind of talk it out. And then I figure out what the beat, where the beats need to be.
Do you record your set and listen to it?
No, I should do that though.
That's insane.
I don't do that.
See, if you don't write, which I understand, I'm the same way. I don't write up top, or I write like an outline and then I'll work it out, but I record it. And then I write it. I write what worked.
Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of have this confidence that I'll get there. It'll get there. And if it doesn't get there, then it wasn't that good. And then I just ditch it.
Must be nice.
I guess. You know what helps too? This is for the comedians listening. Try to become good friends with someone who has a steel trap of a memory. For me, that guy has been, from almost my entire comedy career, Marty DeRosa. Marty DeRosa has an unbelievable memory. And he'll come up to me every now and then. Like, you know, every 6 to 8 months, it feels like he'll say, hey, how come you don't do this joke anymore? And it's a joke that's not on any special or anything.
Wow.
And then I'm like, oh, because I totally forgot it existed. That's why. Yeah. Shit. Thanks. then I'll start to do that joke again, and then it'll find a new home, or it evolves, or it's better, you know, because I've given it some time.
Interesting. So you don't write the traditional way. You don't record, which is stupid in my opinion.
No, you're probably right about that.
I am right about that. What are you doing late at nights? Are you still a night owl now?
Yeah, I'm still. I prefer being up late at night. Well, when I'm not out at shows or hanging out after shows. So Friday night I was off this past Friday. Great comedian Nate Craig was in town at the Lincoln Lodge. So I went over there to catch. I was able to catch like the last 15 minutes of his set. And for the listeners, look up Nate Craig. He's got a few specials out. He opens for Bill Burr on the road and stuff. So I went there to hang out with him and Natasha Pearl Hansen and Jake
Snell.
Snell. Yeah. For a second, I almost said Jake Wells. Henson. And I'm like, I know his name isn't Wells. What am I doing?
He's so funny, too.
Good dude. Yeah. And then, you know, a few other friends were there. So, yeah, just hung out with them. And then before I know it, 1:45 at night.
Are
and
you I'm boozing?
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Not like hard, though. I've gotten more adult about my boozing where I know how to sustain. I know when I need to mix in water. I know when it's like, I'm going to nurse this beer for the next hour. I just like the social atmosphere of
it. Sure.
You know, one of my favorite quotes, I was a huge Nirvana fan, still am, still love Nirvana, still a huge Kurt Cobain fan, but I'm also a big Oasis fan.
You know that.
And I remember Noel Gallagher, who was a Kurt Cobain fan, but he didn't like the song I Hate Myself and I Want to Die, which was a Nirvana song that was on the Beavis and Butthead soundtrack, actually. And he thought, like, he just doesn't get people who don't like life and all that. He goes, to me, the best thing is waking up in the morning because you never know where you're going to end up at night. And I just thought about, I love nights where I don't know where I'm going to end up.
Yeah.
I hate, like, when I go on vacation, I hate, an itinerary.
Planning.
Yeah. I like going, planning one or two things where it's like, well, you got to hit this up, hit that up. But I like going with the flow, being spontaneous. Same. Let's see where it's going to take us. And that's why the nighttime's better. Because, you know, you see more fun shit.
Yeah.
Nothing good does happen after two, though. I agree with that. But I want to be around to see that nothing good happen.
When I stopped drinking, I felt like I was missing out on so much. Because initially I was like, I can't hang out and not drink. But then now I can do it and I'll still drink out like once a month. But what I notice you do now is you're smoking cigarettes every once in a while. Is that
public
knowledge? Thanks
for putting that on the podcast. Yeah, yeah. No, it's fine.
Does your wife know?
Yeah, I think she knows I sneak them here or there.
I mean, I don't think you can hide that shit. You smell like a cigarette. People know.
You know, I try. I put mints in and then I have like a hand lotion.
Oh, really?
But, you know, it's not, I don't buy packs.
You just
I'm that guy. That's a piece
fine.
Of shit.
I bum a cigarette. That's good. It avoids you from becoming.
Yeah, it's more like, you know, I have like 3 or 4 a week. And then I have some weeks where I don't have any. I haven't had one since Wednesday. So it's been 5 days since I've had one. I guess that's not like a big thing, but you know, and before that it was 6 days before I had one, but I've definitely, cause I didn't have one at House of Blues when I saw you.
You did. You went out. We did. You go, who's smoking? I'm going to go out there. You like ran out. That's why I was laughing. I'm like,
nobody was smoking.
Though. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I wanted one. Well, after the holidays, dude, it's stressful, man. You kind of just want to smoke a cigarette to chill out a little bit.
Sure.
I do like, I was worried that I was going to become a full on smoker with comedy because cigarettes do have a nice little
effect. Did you smoke when you were younger?
When I was like summer going into freshman year, we used to go to this pool hall in Chicago.
High school, called, you mean?
Going into freshman year of high school.
Okay.
We used to go, that's probably why I stopped growing around that time. We used to go to this pool hall called Chris's Billiards. It's on Milwaukee Avenue. They actually shot The Color of Money with Paul Newman there. They shot The Hustler there. Also with Paul Newman, I believe. Yeah, he's in both. And that pool hall did not care. They were not carding anybody. So me and my 14, 15-year-old friends, we would get a pool table. It's got like 48 pool tables, like as far away from where all the action is, where all the old guys who were gambling like crazy were, and would chain smoke while playing pool.
Oh.
And Newports were the cheapest cigarettes, so we bought those.
They're so gross.
I know. Well, yeah, I don't think they were menthol. They were just regular Newport.
Okay.
Yeah.
My bad.
But they were, you know, we're kids, so we're just cheap. And then, so that was for a while. And then I remember when I started high school, there was some kids who would sneak cigarettes in the alley.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. So I went to a Chicago public grade school, but I went to an all guys Catholic high school. So I didn't know anybody at the start of high school because nobody from my grade school went to my high school. So I was kind of trying to figure out like, who am I going to hang with? So I remember when I heard, oh, some kids are going over there to smoke. I'm like, yeah, I'll go over there, have a couple. But then slowly I kind of peeled away from that and I stopped smoking. I dipped for a little bit. Yeah, because I played high school baseball. Yeah. Everyone dipped.
I dipped and then I switched to chew, like actual Red Man chew.
Oh,
which
I can't
is
do that.
Insane if you think about it. Mm-hmm. You can't get chew in the city. There's like two places that I could get it. In the proper city, suburbs, you can get everywhere. But like the 7-Eleven on Armitage was the only one that would have Red Man or Levi Garrett was the other brand I used to chew, but I stopped. That's all you do. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Just the mistakes you make when you're young.
So were you a night owl when you were a kid?
Or yes.
Were you
like, no, yeah. And here's go ahead. My dad got me into being a night owl. So what my father would do.
How late are we talking? How year? How many years?
When I was 4 years old.
Holy shit.
Three to 5 years old. I want to say maybe not three. I can't remember. But I do remember staying up very late with him because my dad worked for the Chicago Park District. And my parents divorced when I was around five. So I think this was right around the time they divorced, maybe a little after. So maybe from like age of four to like seven before I started first grade. When I started first grade, that's when they're like, no, you need a proper bedtime now. But maybe in the summer, it didn't matter. Anyway, so my dad, because he would get home from work at like 9, 9:30, we had babysitters a lot. You know, he missed us. So he would keep us up with us.
Yeah.
And his theory was that he wanted to sleep in. So by keeping us up late, we would sleep in.
That's a great move.
So I literally would watch reruns on, back then it was called Channel WPWR Channel 50. Now it became like UPN Network. Now it's something else. All that kind of stuff. But in Chicago at the time, it was that. And we would watch from 10 to 10:30 was Family Feud. Because we'd watch like the WGN News from 9 to 10. 10 to 10:30, Family Feud. 10:30 to 11 was Sanford and Son.
Yes.
And then 11 to 11:30 was All in the Family. And then 11:30 to midnight was The Odd Couple.
Okay.
And usually I would fall asleep halfway into The Odd Couple. My sister would always fall asleep before 11:30, but I would try to make it till midnight. And I remember being like, because my sister was older, I'm like, oh, I'm cooler. I could stay up later than my older sister. And I stay up later and she falls asleep. You know, I thought it was a badass for that. But yeah, so he kept us up late. So I think that's what started me being a night owl.
What about when you went to high school, where you're all boys school? Were you still staying up late on the weekends or weekdays too? Or
weekdays? No, because I was playing sports and I was just tired. I'd crash. Yeah. But, you know, I prefer to stay up late. You know what I did? This is funny, too. In grade school, like fourth, fifth grade, Baywatch would be on in reruns at midnight.
Oh, no.
And I was a huge Pamela Anderson, Yasmin Bleeth guy. So sure. I would stay up late to watch reruns of Baywatch from midnight to 1 a.m. during the school week. Because it was Monday through Friday. It was on at midnight. And I hadn't seen the early seasons. And they were rerunning the early seasons. Because I got into Baywatch like season 3, 4. You know, when that Australian lifeguard came over. So I was like, I got to catch up on the Nicole Eggert episodes.
Nicole Eggert was on there too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was really into, I had a Pamela Anderson poster.
That's such a good show.
The drama is underrated show. Okay. These were lifeguards.
Have you watched Shark Attacks?
No, I'm sure it doesn't hold up.
It doesn't hold up.
The music was cheesy as hell, but I remember liking the music.
I don't think I ever watched the full episode.
Well, how can you say it doesn't hold up?
Because I tried to watch it. And then during COVID, I went back and watched all these shows from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And certain shows are just so bad. Some are really good. Some hold up. But that one, no. I couldn't watch. I tried to because I was like, oh, maybe like David Hasselhoff. I went on like a little David Hasselhoff clip. Like I watched Knight Rider. So bad.
So bad. So, yeah.
It doesn't even make sense. I don't know how as a kid, I can't follow it now. I'm like, wait, if he's the bad guy, like it doesn't, there's like so many twists that don't make sense. They just wanted to confuse people. It was the car. The car was the star.
Yeah. Kip? Was that the guy's name? Or Kit?
And then there was an evil brother car that was like Cat or something.
And the voice of the car was Mr. Feeny in Boy Meets World.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, same actor that did that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what was there ever a time where you weren't up late at nights? Like, did you ever have day jobs where you had to go to bed early and shit?
I did have day jobs where I had to go to bed early, but I didn't do a good job waking up. So, I never had serious enough day jobs where I'm like, if I don't wake up early, or, you know, I never had a job like you where you were a lawyer.
Yeah.
When you're a lawyer,
it's
you
a
have
career.
To, it's a career, right? So I remember like I had a summer job working for the Cook County Board of Pension when I was in high school and college, summer only, you know what I mean? And, you know, so I'd show, and I was in the back. No one ever saw me. So
you
could
take
show.
Naps.
Dude, but I had a job working, it was for a company called Chicago Liquidators. They've since changed their name to something else, but it's still in existence. It's over off of Armitage and Ashland. So I had a warehouse gig in my 27 to 28, 29, and I'd drive around a forklift and stuff, and it was shipping. We were all shipping stuff. So we'd gather boxes, and it was this big warehouse. And
don't you have to be in the union to drive a forklift?
No, you don't. You should be. And I'm pro-union, but I was not. And I remember showing up hungover all the time because I would do shows, you know, comedians you should know, and at Laugh Factory and Lincoln Lodge. and throwing up in like cardboard boxes and being like, I'll throw those out later. And
ship that
out. Or I would take the part where they're like, all right, who wants to go up to the fourth floor and gather up all this stuff? I'm like, I'll do that. Because I knew if I did it real fast for like 8 minutes, I could then take a 20-minute nap. Yeah, and nobody's going to come up to the fourth floor to check, because the fourth floor was a bitch of a place to get to, you know?
Yeah. You can always find ways to sleep at any job, even when you have a career.
Oh, I slept under the desk when I worked for the county. I did that. And someone remember pulling their like chair up underneath. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do? Like, how am I going to get out of here?
when I started my own law firm, when I quit my law firm originally and I still was doing comedy, I bought a couch for my office. So I'd go to court at like 8:30 in the morning. If I did shows the night before and hung out late, I would just go, I'm like, close the door. I'm like, I'm going to be sleeping for the next hour and a half. I'd sleep from like 10:30 to noon, just get a nap in, get sleep in. So you can do that even in real jobs.
You can, you know, there's always a way to find out. Like I worked at a Menards for a few months when I was like 20 years old, 1920. And, you know, I remember sleeping on like the styrofoam, like this big styrofoam stuff.
Excellent.
And like, you know, insulation. I was sleeping on that. Yeah. I just always knew how to slack off or stuff. But I've never had a job where it was like, I have to get my 8 hours of sleep. I have to be presentable in the morning. I have to put a suit on. I have to do all this kind of stuff. You know, but if I've had jobs where I'm like, all right, I've fucked around a lot this week. Tomorrow I'm going to make sure I'm okay. But for the most part, I've been fortunate, you know?
So if you're not hanging out late night drinking at the Lincoln Lodge or Laugh Factory, what are you doing if you're up? Do you fall asleep if you have nothing to do, or you just stay up anyway and just stick around? Or are you productive? Do you do anything like, I know you don't write, but...
No, I think, and to me, thinking is writing. You know what I mean? Like,
so you're staring at the fucking TV thinking?
I try not to. I try to get sleep because I'm so desperate for sleep. You know, I've got two kids, and I wake up early now, right, because I have to get them out of the house.
How many hours of sleep do you need?
This past week, I've probably gotten 4 or 5 hours of sleep a day.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, man. It's going to catch up to me soon, I'm sure.
Oh, it is.
I've gotten better at it, though. Like, so when I don't have a show... So say like, you know, okay, I don't have a show next Tuesday. I'll try to fall asleep by 11. Okay. So I'll sleep 11 to like 6:30.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
I think you can make up. I feel like days where I don't sleep for a couple of days, I can make it up.
Oh yeah. Like if I'm headlining a club on the road, like I'll be in St. Louis next weekend and I didn't bring a feature. Cause there are some times where I'm like, I'm not going to bring anyone because I want it.
Yeah,
then you got to entertain and hang out with them.
Exactly.
Which is fun a lot of times. But I know I need the rest, I'll literally sleep all day as much as I can. You know, I'll wake up, dick around on my computer, do comedian stuff, edit a clip, and do that, kind of send an email out, go to the shows, right when the shows are over with, go right back to the hotel. You know, I'm not doing sightseeing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not doing any of that.
There's nothing to do on the road. 90% of the time where you're on the road, nothing is open. So, like, I'm a night owl beyond just the normal 2 a.m. Like, now my schedule is so fucked up, but nothing is open. Like, you go to St. Louis, you go to Plano, Texas, you go to fucking anywhere. Nothing's open. Even I was in Las Vegas. Things after COVID, there's no one open.
The 24-hour diner, we miss that, don't we?
Yeah, we just talked about that.
Favorite things, and it's slowly dying. So many of them. But that was the thing about it where I'm like, all right, so since COVID, you guys just stopped. Was it really because you couldn't find anyone to work those hours? Or was it you were just running a business and you're like, I was such a headache being open that
those
late.
Hours,
I'm
going to
switch. Yeah, that could be it too. But I miss those, man. Getting French toast at 1 a.m. is awesome.
The and we talked about this before, but the one that Hollywood place on North Ashland,
Hollywood Grill.
They're like trying to be a legit business. They close at like 6.
Know your worth.
Hours.
Know what people want.
Who are you going to compete with? You think you're going to compete with like the nice brunch places? You're a greasy spoon. You have to be open at least at 10.
Like, I know. I found it. I got a late night gyro after House of Blues, and I can't remember the name of it. I think it was called like something submarine, not Mr. Submarine, of course, but something. It was
in that area,
not too far from there. It was like Ashland and Division, like a block south of Division on Ashland. I can't remember the name of it, but it was one of those places where I walked in. I'm like, this place looks like it gets robbed a lot. It just did. They had like real thick glass when I ordered through it. And I'm like, what is this? Because that's kind of a nice neighborhood, but I could definitely see it getting hit up because it's open late. I just love staying up late, dude. I don't really stare at, like, you know, I didn't really fully answer your question before, but as far as I'm fortunate enough where when I decide to go to sleep, I can. But of course, like anyone else, I'm going to have those nights where I am just up and I don't know why. And it's like, I got to get some fucking sleep. What are you doing? And that's what starts to piss me off too. Like every now and then my wife will get into a story because I just told her a story. So of course it's natural for her to be like, oh, I got a story too. And then sometimes halfway through the story, I'll be like, oh, fuck. I want to sleep, because then I'll start to do the math where I'm like, if I fall asleep right now, I maybe will get 5.5 hours, six hours of sleep. How long is the story going to go? Is this the type of story that when it ends, I could be like, okay, and then I could go to sleep, or do I have to engage further with you? You know what I mean? And it's not just her. It's anyone you tell stories with. You're kind of like say you're trying to leave the bar to go get your late night food, and someone tells you one last quick story.
You're like, I got to get out of here. I'm really good at not engaging. Where I like walk into a conversation and I feel like life is too short where I don't have to be nice anymore. Maybe that's why people hate me, but like they'll be in a conversation. I'll be like, you guys are talking about like plants or something I don't give a fuck about. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to walk out of this situation. And sometimes people, like I remember Matty Ryan and someone else was talking about something and I walked up because we're talking about this. He like gave me the background. I'm like, oh, cool.
So I do it. Yeah.
And he's just like, he's like, what? I could tell he's like, this guy's a piece of shit.
I don't even think that's a piece of shit move. If it's a subject you don't like and you have nothing to add to the conversation, then
leave. Those are the situations where you get into a lot. And when I'm dating someone, sometimes I'll just be like, tell me about your day while we're sleeping so I can fall asleep. And then I know that's rude to say, but it does help me like calm me where I don't have to engage. If I'm not interested in the story, like if they're talking about their day as a teacher or something, you're like, okay, cool. I could listen passively and just kind of like tune out and calm down because I don't have to be like, oh, what happened? Like, you know, when you're telling me a story, I'm like, I want to hear what happened when you were at the Funny Bone or whatever. But like if someone's talking about, oh, I had this kid, he got sick and I had to send him to the nurse or whatever, you're just like, what the fuck? I'm just trying to fall asleep. This is great. But you don't have to be an active listener.
That's your go-to example. Someone pouring their heart out about a poor sick child.
I didn't want to tell the real story because then the person will be like, you fucking asshole.
I hear you.
But I had to come up with some job that I know nobody that's a teacher that I date. So
that makes sense. Oh, yeah. You date around a lot. Not that you're a whore, but like, you know, you're dating a lot.
Retired fuck boy is what I like to say.
Retired fuck boy?
Retired fuck boy. I had a good run. Not like these young kids that are like.
I think when you hit a certain age, you can't be referred to as a fuck boy.
Yeah.
What's the word?
Retired.
Retired.
Former fuck boy.
You know what word I like a lot? Womanizer.
Womanizer.
That just sounds awesome. Doesn't it? It sounds like you're like a fucking robot machine that women want to fuck, right? Yeah, you know?
Man-eater and womanizer. So yeah. They need to have a website.
Like, a woman who's a man-eater meeting a man who's a womanizer. They get together. What's going to happen? CBS, Monday nights, 8 p.m.
That was a show, Boomerang, with Eddie Murphy. Remember, he was a player, and then he met his match, and he fell in love with her. Boomerang. It was a movie.
I remember Boomerang. Yeah.
Not good. What are your late night bars, go-to bars? We got to get out of here. I want to get all the...
All right, my all-timer.
These are the quick questions. Go ahead.
All right.
Late bars.
Galway Bay Pub, right up
close
there.
Close at 2, though, right?
Close at 2. All right, so 4 a.m. bars. You're asking for my favorite 4 a.m. bars?
Both. We did the Galway Bay. Where's the 4 a.m. bar?
4 a.m. bar, all-time favorite. I have to go with the Oakwood on Montrose and Damon. It's got a jukebox that's pretty good, and then there's one table. It's a booth that looks like a half booth, but when you slide into it, it's a piano, and nobody realizes it. So I love taking people there for the first time and going, hey, slide into the booth. They slide in and go, fucking piano? Holy shit.
Well, cool.
From the outside, it looks like just your typical, like, you know, half
Can
type.
Can you play it?
Yeah.
If you know how.
No, I remember I used to hang out with this one dude and he would always play The Office theme and everyone would be like, yeah, like, you know, when The Office was super popular, like in 2010.
You know what late night bar I'm not a fan of, even though I know this is sacrilegious and a lot of people are going to fucking get mad at me, is Old Town Ale House. I think it's just okay.
Oh, man.
I love the history of it. I love the artwork. I think it's great. But that jukebox sucks ass. It's all jazzy, bluesy shit that I don't want to hear late at night. I like that music sometimes, but not. I want to hear 90s music. I want to hear some good music.
And you know, I go back and forth on that place. There are sometimes I'm in there, I'm like, this bar is amazing. And there are other times where I'm like, very overrated.
Especially on weekends where it's just crowded. And like so the crowded. Headliner says, we're going to Old Ale House if someone's out of town. And you're like, now it's going to be a shit show there. In addition to the 50,000 people that were there, now another 20 from Zanies are going to come in. Now it's going to be even more crowded.
So. Well, I'm at the age, maybe you're at this age too, where you're like, certain bars during the week, I love them. But on the weekends, you couldn't pay me to go inside there.
We were at, a lot of comedians were going to go to a club when I was on the road recently. And I was like, there's no way in hell I'm going to go in a club. They're like, no, we got a table. I'm like, even worse. Like, the last thing I want to do is like yell with loud DJ music? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Have you, when was the last time you went to like a club with like DJ music?
Oh man, Megan Gailey's bachelorette party. I was the only guy Megan Gailey's bachelorette party, and we were in like a clubbing situation where it was bottle service and stuff. Oh, well, it was like a one-time thing, and I hadn't been in forever, so I had fun with it.
Yeah.
How could I not have fun with this? My friend's bachelorette party, and I was the only dude there, so I'm like, for the stories, I got to be a good guy. Yeah, this was 2019, so 4 years ago. But yeah, it's been that long. I can't remember the last time I was in a situation like that where I'm like, we're going to fucking go clubbing and do this and
that. I used to end up at clubs all the time because certain comedians would want to go to clubs downtown, and I'm just like, how did I have the tolerance for that shitty music, shitty situation?
I used to too. I used to end up at all those places because I was hanging out with a few crews of people who were like, we're going here, we're gonna go to Paris Club, we're gonna go to American
Paris
Junkie
Club,
we're gonna
yeah.
go to
I was
blah,
there
blah, blah.
Every weekend, every fucking weekend I was at Paris Club, all those bars, Billy
Social
Jack's,
25
and on Hubbard Street,
yeah, Mercer,
Mercer.
There's a few.
These are all bars. These are all like douchey clubs in Chicago.
They are. You know what I like about those, though? You know what I would find myself doing when I'd be at them? And I know we got to wrap up, but when I was at those type of clubs, I would stand there watching the, because they always had the music video to the song that was playing.
Oh yeah.
And you never see music videos anymore.
It was fun, yeah.
So I would just stand there with my drink and people would be like, you having fun? I'm like, yeah, I'm having a great time. They're like, you're just standing here. I'm like, I've never seen this music video before. And I can't believe they still make this shit. And by the way, how good does Rihanna look? Like, you know, stuff like that, right? So it was fun.
I say douchey, but the fact is I was one of those douche every fucking weekend I was there. And I loved it. But from you had a girlfriend, now wife, like for me, the goal when I was a fuckboy back then, I just wanted to hook up. What were you doing there? You're just like,
I was just
watching
friends.
Videos?
Yeah, watching music videos, hanging out with friends. You know, I would just go with the flow. Because it would be like when we'd do shows like downtown in River North usually, and then people were like, you know, I got my friends usually live in the neighborhoods. So when they go downtown, they're like, we're going to make a night of it. I'm just going to go downtown for a couple hours, watch your show and leave. Let's go around the corner to this bar. Let's go to that bar. And then I was hanging out with some people who have some money. So then they like to spend it. And, you know, when I'm going to say no to, you know, I would never order Grey Goose ever, even if I had the money to buy Grey Goose. But if Grey Goose is free, I'm drinking it.
Yeah.
So that's how it goes. Yeah.
For those that don't know, it's a vodka. I'm sure everyone knows.
If you don't know it's a vodka, then
we have sober. We have
listen to a different
sober
podcast.
have you ever been out? I know we got to get out of here soon, but I want to say, have you ever been out late at night where you're like, you know how you said earlier that you're like, nothing good happens after 2 a.m. Have you been in a situation where you're like, fuck, I should have just gone home? Like, where you got in a situation where you wish you weren't in that you can talk about?
A lot of the fights I've been in too. I lost my wedding ring in a fight at four a.m.
Story about that.
Yeah, I was at Yahtzee's, which is now called Durno's, next to Galway Bay Pub on Diversity here in the wonderful city of Chicago. And you know, it was -30 degrees out. My friends were like, "Let's go home," but some guy like kind of talked a little shit inside the bar, which is why I was outside.
Did
he
really talk shit, or now as an older person, you look back and you're like, maybe it wasn't.
I still think he talked the shit because I had joked around with this girl. This girl took all this popcorn back to her group and she was talking to my friend earlier. So I jokingly said, hey, where are you going, popcorn hog? And she even turned and smiled because she remembered I was talking to her earlier. And then the dude just stared at me hard and I'm like, what? And he's like, you're being a little loud over there, guy. And then I went from like smiling to
you
being like,
to
I'll fucking
Chris
kill
Farley?
You. Yeah, that's how he sounded. Yeah, he's like, you're being a little loud over there, guy. And I responded with, I'll fucking kill you. And then he walked toward me. I walked toward him, but then people were in the way. And then one of the bartenders was like, get rid of him. And they kicked me out. So I waited out there for him. And then we started a massive brawl. And during the fight, my wedding ring came off somehow. I know I had it on before I started punching him in the face, but it came out during one of my left crosses, I want to say. And because your fingers shrink when it's really cold out. And it was during the polar vortex of 2014. And yeah, I lost the ring.
How many fights have you been in, Joe?
I mean, a lot of people ask that. And I'm like, who keeps track? I don't know.
I know exactly how many I've been in.
I couldn't keep track.
Over 10.
I've definitely been in over 10 fights.
As an adult?
Not maybe close to 10 as an adult.
Jesus Christ, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, like, but fights as an adult for the most part.
Physical, I mean.
Yes, physical. I'm not, of course, not counting.
Was that the
verbal
last fight?
Jesus, what kind of pussy counts verbal? Well, this one guy called me a loser and I told him to go fuck his face. No,
fights
like,
on Twitter. No, what? Yeah. What was the last fight you got into?
Megan Gailey's bachelorette party. In 2019. That was the last one. I've been fight free for almost a full presidential term. Yeah, this guy snuck into there because she had a roped off VIP section because, you know, it was like her and like 19 women and me. And, you know, you pay a lot of money for that. And so these two dudes snuck into that and like helped themselves. And then they kind of like sat up on, you know, people for whatever reason at nightclubs, you guys could see on the camera, they sit on top of the couch with their feet where your butt would go. It's a big thing at nightclubs. And these dudes were sitting there and Megan and a few of her friends were right along there. And then the bottle service girl starts getting in the guy's face to be like, get out of there. And then he was trying to be like, I can't hear you. What do you want me to do? Is he pretending like he couldn't hear? So they waved me over. And I was like, buddy, you got to go, man. She paid a lot of money for this. It's her bachelorette party. And he did the same thing to me. He's like, I can't hear you. What are you trying to say, my man? What's this? It's so loud. And I turned around and I looked at Lisa Traeger and Kara Clank. And these are comedians everyone should check out. And they gave me this look like, you got the green light. We are giving you the bat signal. Go for it. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then just grabbed the dude by the shirt. And I had leverage because he's sitting up top. And I just like flipped him over and he sent him sliding across the dance floor. And then I went towards him because I thought if he gets up, I want to have leverage.
Yeah,
you don't ground and pound. You stand where if he gets up, you can kind of like stomp him back down.
Sure.
Because if you go ground and pound, you don't know who's around that are his friends. Pound.
Sure.
Well, because if you're on top of him and you start punching him in the face, one of his friends can just run up and knee you in the head because you're already down.
Good advice.
Stay on your feet. So yeah, I won't give away too much of the story because I'm working it as a bit now. That was the last one. And then the year before.
So what happened afterwards? Did he run away?
He got kicked out because the girl who was our, bartender or waitress, whatever, the private girl who took care of us, she told the security, no, he had my back. So get rid of them. I think they actually bought us a bottle of Grey Goose or something.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we stayed there. And then the year before I got into a bar fight at Big City, another 4 a.m. bar because someone got loud with my buddy's, they're broken up now, but at the time his girlfriend, he wasn't there. And some guy got a little fresh with her, and she was one of the bartenders and servers at Laugh Factory. Yeah. So we started a big brawl. What was sad about that one was Todd Massey, who won't mind me mentioning this. He's a comedian friend of ours, everyone. He's in Austin, Texas now. He tore his MCL during that fight. But here's the thing. I love Todd. He wasn't really going to help because it did turn into a little brawl. He got up. When I pushed the one dude over, he spilled his drink, and he slipped on the spilled drink and tore his MCL. I felt like terrible about it, but yeah, I mean, I'm like, oh, you should have stayed seated, my man. Yeah. Nope. So, but then I don't know. If I went over every fight I've been into as an adult, we would be doing 2019.
That's a good 5 hour. That's 5 years away or 4 years, 5 years.
Is it 2024 now? Holy shit. Fuck. But it was a little over 4 years ago. Cause the anniversary came up of it. It was,
you keep it
in September of 2023. It would have been 4 years. So it's been 4 years, 4 months or something.
Okay.
So I'm going to try to make it 5 years. And then on the 5th year anniversary, I'm going to fuck someone up randomly.
We'll take you to a club.
Get out of my car and beat the shit out of a stranger.
We'll take you to a club, get in a bar. We'll drive up there and see what happens.
We got to film it. It'll be good for the Night Owl podcast.
There you go. Where can people find out more about you and where can they see the special Good Grief?
So Good Grief, my new special is on punchup.live. I made it easy for people though. Punchup.live is this great new comedy platform. It's just started. There's only like 14 comedians on there so far and they're... all 13 of them are way more famous than me. So anyway, if you go on there, you get my tour dates and the special. It's free to watch there. You do have to put in an email, but no spam whatsoever. It'll just tell you when I'm to be in your town. You can go to joekilgallen.com and it links you directly to my punch up site.
Yeah. We'll have that all on.
Yeah. So just joekilgallen.com for my tour dates and everything. I've got some really good ones coming up. I'm going to be in LA at the end of February. I'm going to be at Mic Drop Mania in Chandler, Arizona, March 22nd, March 23rd. Those are going to be some big shows. So, yeah, a lot of fun stuff coming up in 2024.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe, for doing the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Why Are You Awake?